Robin Carmeda is joining us. Now, this time last year, 9 specialists were appointed to a multi-stakeholder group to provide advice to the government on countering disinformation and address its effects in this country. The Disinformation Multi-Stakeholder Group's now fulfilled its term. And Robin Carmeda is with us this morning, is a co-chair. She hails from Te Rārawa, Te Pōuri, Te Tukura. And I thank Robin for joining us, who's had a lot of experience in the digital space. Thanks. Tuhene, tēnā koe, Robin, ko dae o tēnei.
Tēnā koe, Dale.
Kia ora. Disinformation, misinformation. I mean, many rabbit holes on the net, as we well know. Firstly, just to set up our kōrero, could you talk with us about the challenge that you were tasked with and where we are at now? I noticed that the group has filed its report, described as methodical and careful examination of the nature, risks and usage of disinformation. What were you asked to do, Robin?
Well, we were asked to provide an independent expert advice, so we all came in with different lenses, I guess. For me, it was the technology and the Māori lens, or a Māori lens, to inform the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet on how it could increase our resilience to disinformation, keeping in mind that disinformation is quite difficult to define. But, you know, for your listeners, it's information that is false, that can cause harm, and those harms are increasingly being reported in Aotearoa. So it's quite important for us to get in front of the campaigns and the disruption that disinformation represents. So this group was charged with taking the government to the next step in its thinking. It was part of a wider spectrum of disinformation projects and research that were happening at the same time and are still are happening. And it resulted in 5 recommendations to the Crown.
Tēnā koe, before we talk about those recommendations, how were Māori concerns wrapped up into the mahi that you were doing? And I know you don't speak definitively on behalf of Ngai Māori, but nobody does, but you were able to take your experience in the Māori space and your understanding of digital matters to the table with you. How did the Māori whakaro input the drafting of these 5 recommendations?
Yeah, you're right. I don't represent Māori. I represent myself. So when I came into this, I did look very carefully at what was the opportunity for Māori to have a voice in this. My sense right at the beginning was that I needed to open a door, so that's what the recommendations do. The plan is when we go to the next step that we look at a full spectrum of involvement and engagement around this topic. So the recommendations talk about a multi-stakeholder group. They use the term civil society. Sometimes Māori don't see themselves as part of that civil society. So informing the next steps towards a group, the recommended approach would be to engage fully with iwi and Māori specifically to get quite a cross-section of voices and experiences so that any next steps by the government or civil society are fully inclusive of that. There is one issue that I did observe, and that as Māori, we're not always necessarily at high maturity level of understanding disinformation. So I think there's an education and information piece for us as well.
Disinformation, I guess you can at times feel that it's accidental, but then it could be very, very deliberate, and it can be generated from all parts of the globe. So how might we buffer ourselves from the effects of a sort of sinister disinformation?
Yeah, you're right. It's a very scary space, and there have been several campaigns targeting New Zealand and, of course, across the whole world. For Māori, I would say becoming more informed and understanding the space is a critical first step. The second one is, we saw this, I think, with COVID right at the beginning. We mobilised pretty quickly and we informed our communities and we took steps to protect ourselves. I think that same approach is what is needed here as well. So this is a scary space. It moves very, very rapidly. It's not a case of you learn about it last week and hope it will be the same next month. You have to stay on top of some of the techniques being used. It's fueled by social media and technology as well, of course, and we're all in those spaces. So having a greater understanding of what disinformation looks like when it's in front of us is really quite critical. I would say that our best approach as Māori would be to make sure that we take an independent approach to how we inform each other, but also lean into what the government security agencies are hearing and lean into what civil society and NGO groups are doing as well.
Tēnā koe, do you sense there's a case for a non-government entity to lead long-term work on disinformation?
Yeah, I'm 80% saying yes, we do need a separation from government. But my caveat is that group needs to be properly resourced as well. It needs to have a conduit to funds to be able to do what it does, and it also needs a conduit to the very latest security information that it can get. It also needs good representation. Now, we felt we stepped back away from defining the makeup of that group or its terms of reference because we weren't a representative group. But we did point to the idea, let's have a proper engagement process to form, let's say, a group or groups that would handle this.
Robin, how challenging is it to identify disinformation?
I think it's very challenging, especially now. So we have, you'll know that we have Gen AI sitting in behind these campaigns. They're getting far more sophisticated over time. And so this is a real challenge that we need to address. We've got, quite often, the disinformation campaigns happen around events. For example, the obvious one is COVID-19, the elections. We've looked at some of the campaigns happening overseas. For example, we've got a snap election in the UK and another one in France happening, I think, this week. And their ability to combat disinformation is quite a challenge, even at the government and security level. So, yes, your question's a good one. This is a very, very big challenge for us.
What looms as the biggest challenge for us as a people and the cultural disinformation that could easily spread and rally those who already have a disparaging view of Ngāi Māori whip up steam, so to speak? I mean, the potential for white supremacist postings, mis and disinformation can drive a wedge into the race relations in this country. Is this a significant threat for us as an Indigenous people?
I think it is. So there have been multiple studies on which groups are being targeted, which groups are most vulnerable. They don't always agree with each other, so it's really hard to kind of pick a measurement of what is the level of vulnerability of Māori, for example. But we do see, for example, posts will target transgender people, for example. They probably have the greatest percentage of posts that will attack them. The government is probably close with the same level of attacks at that, you know, proportionally. Mainstream media, as you know, is also a target. Some figures I've seen are around 8%, 9% of posts, and Māori around the 7 to 8% of posts. So Māori, that might not sound much, but it's about the effect of those posts and whether they drive people to action in the real world. If we look at the vulnerable groups to disinformation campaigns, I see two groups. The vulnerability has two lenses, I guess. The first are those that may be the target of attacks, driven, for example, by racism. And the second group are those who can be convinced to mobilise in the physical world to act. And we're seeing that Māori are targeted in that area. For example, the beehive occupation, who was on the front line? They were Māori. So this is another form of vulnerability where people can be mobilised because they truly believe something and they are used as the foot soldiers, if you like, for a campaign that may be driven from overseas.
Tēnā koe, thank you for the mahi that the group have done and that you've overseen. Five recommendations establish guiding principles. Civil society should lead and coordinate responses to mis- and disinformation. Undertake additional empirical work and evidence gathering specific to this country. Determine whether or how to fund community-led mitigation and resilience building efforts, and continue to consider and develop our country's approach to increasing resilience to dis and misinformation. Those are the sort of recommendations in short. We'll follow through on this kaupapa too, Robin, because we're not going to unravel it all in one small interview session, but I do appreciate what you've done already. Might it be okay if I can morph our kōrero, into the Toihangara report, which I know it comes out this week, an annual report on our 85 Māori-owned tech companies and enterprises. You've been a long-time kaimahi in this space. What might we expect from this report due out soon?
Yeah, this is the second report, so my attempt is to have an annual report. The original reason for writing the report was that I was seeing particularly that government programs on digital equity, skills and capability building aren't really working. So if we look at two or three decades of trying to fill that gap, we don't have a critical mass of Māori in the tech sector. So the first reason that this report is done, and it's very, very data-driven, is to capture that data to inform both government programs and also inform ourselves. So our companies want to know how our peers grow their companies and increase their revenues and survive past that typical three-year lifetime. And so I wanted to really unpack all of the data and hear from the founders about what works. So what you can expect is we've got 85 companies. I know that next year I think we're going to get to 100. But of those 85 companies, six of them were collectively owned. So we have iwi Māori collectives who are now entering the tech space. The others are individually owned. Most of our Māori companies have a social good as well as a commercial remit. So they're looking, for example, to intergenerational wealth and purpose, which is something that you do see in other companies too. But for Māori companies, this is a really dominant feature of the companies. So that this also creates a challenge for them, because while they're trying to grow commercially and increase their revenues, they're also funneling some of those revenues back into social good, whānau-oriented programs and things of that nature. So we can expect to see lots and lots of data. So for the data geeks out there, you're going to love the last section of this report. But we also have some narratives on it talking about what are the big things coming through for Māori to consider. Gen AI is a huge one for everybody. But we unpack that a little bit, and we also look at the kinds of companies that are finding themselves in positions of stronger revenues, often the companies that are creating platforms for others to succeed. So their business model is a platform, and then other companies come and build their businesses off that platform. Those are the strongest revenue companies of the set, generally speaking.
Well, it's been an interesting kōrero. I thank you for sharing some whakaaro with our people. I te atana e te tuhine. Kia ora rā watu koe, ngā mihi. Kia koe, me tō whānau, mo tō wāo Matariki. Thanks so much for sharing some kōrero with us this morning, Robin. All the best going forward.
Good day.
Tēnā koe. Thank you, Robin.